This is Hashtag History episode 83. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And is it just me or are we on our third episode of season 9 and thus far every single episode has been about a woman in history?
I mean, it is us.
It is us. Yeah, that's true. So we are not an exclusively women's history podcast, although there are so many good ones out there.
Yeah.
But we love talking about women in history and we do so every chance that we get.
Yeah, for sure.
We just went like a little heavy with it this season. I just glanced at the lineup for the rest of the season. And while this is not our last episode to feature a woman in history, this episode does end our consecutive female feature streak.
And to be fair, like we did not consult with each other when choosing our episodes.
So we were just really feeling those women's history feminist vibes.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
So to wrap up this female feature streak, as I guess I'm now calling
it. I like it.
Female feature streak. We are discussing this week Patty Hearst, who in 1974, at only 19 years old, was kidnapped from her apartment in Berkeley, California. A few days after her kidnapping, a tape was received by a Berkeley radio station from the Symbionese Liberation Army that stated that they were holding Hearst as a prisoner of war and demanded that the Hearst family give millions of dollars worth of food to needy Californians in exchange for their daughter.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of nice. Not the kidnapping and extortion part, but like
that's what the reward that they wanted.
Yeah, however, they didn't want millions of dollars for themselves. They wanted them to give it
sure,
to the needy?
Sure. But as we will get there, you will see that it was an impossible task.
Well, clearly.
Mm-hmm. So they were never going to be able to satisfy it.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, clearly dissatisfied with the family's response to this demand that we will get into later, the group continued to hold Hearst seemingly against her will. Everything changed, though, when 2 months after her kidnapping, surveillance footage at a San Francisco bank captured Hearst participating in an armed robbery alongside the group and later personally declared in tape recordings that she had officially joined the Symbionese Liberation Army of her own free will. Patty Hearst instantly became one of the most hated people in America. When she was eventually arrested nearly 2 years after her capture, the country stood divided on their beliefs about her involvement. Was she a traitor? Had she really joined the SLA of her own volition? Or had she been brainwashed? Does Patty Hearst represent one of the most classic cases of Stockholm Syndrome in history? We will find all of that out this week and so much more. But first, a cocktail.
Sorry.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And this is Hashtag History.
The podcast for both history nerds and history haters alike.
Where we dive into history's greatest stories of controversy, conspiracy, and corruption.
Okay, I'm so excited. Not about the cocktail.
Oh,
we'll get into that.
Why?
I'm so excited because this week's cocktail was sponsored by my BFF, Jill, or as I like to refer to her lovingly as Jilly Billy Philly Cheesesteak, and her husband, Alex. Alex, who is such a huge supporter of the podcast.
Yes.
Alex is like a fangirl of the podcast.
He's been such an amazing... And Jill, too. They've both been so, so supportive of the podcast from day one.
Yeah. I miss you guys.
Yeah.
Even though I saw you last night on Zoom. Okay. Now, that's that. And it's out of the way.
Fun part is out of the way.
The good part is out of the way.
Yeah,
because
Thank you to Jill and Alex for sponsoring the cocktail.
Yes, thank you.
You are really... I mean, aside from your support of the podcast in general... Truly the only light in this cocktail segment.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
But Jill will be happy to know one of the ingredients.
Okay.
So we're going to hate it.
Yeah.
This is the Hearst cocktail.
Okay.
It's named after Patty's granddaddy, William Randolph Hearst, as... Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know who needs a little refresher here. He's a newspaper mogul. I don't even know what else to say about him other than that. He owns the Hearst Mansion here in California.
Mm-hmm. We'll be talking about him.
We'll be talking about him. So stay tuned. So the Hearst cocktail, it contains 2 ounces of gin. Shout out to Jill who loves gin.
Perfect.
A 1/2 ounce of vermouth. that's all we have to say about that. Mm-hmm. And then a dash of orange bitters, or like 12 in our case, and a dash of Angostura bitters, or like 12 in our case, because we do lots of dashes.
Well, of course, when you do like one dash, it's like, did it actually make a difference?
Yeah. So you can see what we mean about not being excited about this for anyone who's listened to any of these episodes before, because I'm pretty sure like every ingredient other than maybe the bitters, which are whatever, we're not fans of.
No, you have recently come to...
I like gin now.
I was going to say a step above tolerate gin.
I would say like.
Oh.
I don't love it.
Wow.
I like gin.
I feel like you're a traitor to the brand, but that's okay.
Yeah. It's
growth.
Growth. Hashtag growth.
Hashtag growth. But neither of us have grown in the department of vermouth.
No. So. It's just... No.
Yeah.
So anyways, I had to do a cocktail named after the family. So yeah, that's why we landed on this gross thing. So we'll just buck up and deal with it. Mm-hmm. And it helps that we are now on our third cocktail of the afternoon, and we may or may not have made a backup cocktail. So if you like hear throughout the episode us going like, that's good. That's not for the Hearst cocktail. That's for the other one we're drinking.
That's for the palate cleanser.
Yeah, that's the palate cleanser, which is a like rum cocktail that we're drinking.
Oh yeah, that we're gonna love in no doubts.
Yeah.
Okay. Cheers.
You're not moving your hand towards your beverage.
I'm like cheers with my hands like tightly in my lap.
Bound in her lap.
Okay. Moving. Cheers. This may turn into a shot.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yep. Let me say it's the better of the vermouths that we've had.
Yeah.
Right? Don't love it, of course. But I don't hate it. Do I hate it?
Maybe there's some... The thing we hate about gin and the thing we hate about vermouth somehow cancels each other out.
I could not agree with you more.
And neither of us can put our finger on what it is we hate about either of those things. Right? I don't know what it is.
I completely agree.
I mean, I don't think I'll like gag while drinking it. Like... many of our previous cocktails
so far haven't gagged. I mean, if you've been listening to our podcast long enough, you have heard many cocktails that we've had to just chug. This actually surprisingly isn't one of them.
Missing one thing that I would be like, okay, maybe good. I don't know what it is. It's like a type of juice or maybe simple syrup, citrus of some sort. Would maybe. That make it better?
So a little like lemon squeeze or something. Yeah.
Anyways, I'm not going to go up and get lemon.
No,
it's not worth it because this cocktail is also crazy small.
Yeah.
It took up like half of a mason jar.
Half of a small mason jar.
Mm-hmm. So.
All right. What's your rating on this one?
It's like a 5-4. Four.
I was going to say a 4-2. A 4-2. A 4 as well.
4.2?
A 4 also.
Oh. So. Yep, there it is. It gets a little worse as you drink it.
Yep,
doesn't agreed. Get better.
Agreed. I just had a shiver.
Does not get better as you drink.
Ooh. Okay, so where does one even begin with this episode? I think before we can even begin to talk about Patty Hearst, we have to talk about her family, which is perfect timing because we just came off of that Hearst cocktail segment.
Yeah, and I gave you a really shitty background on her grandfather.
No, you didn't.
I was like, he was a newspaper mogul and
owns the Hearst Castle, which is essentially what I'm going to say with just longer sentences.
Okay.
You and will see.
Probably some dates, some numbers.
It's essentially the same thing, but longer. So, I mean, like you've already said, she has some very well-known and soups wealthy lineage. Her grandfather was William Randolph Hearst Sr. Cheers to Billy.
Billy.
He was an American businessman most well known for publishing the largest newspaper chain in America, being the owner of the San Francisco Examiner, later acquiring the New York Journal. And he was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, who later unsuccessfully ran for president of the United States.
See, already learning more.
But it's just longer sentences is really all it is. He was known for being staunchly anti-communist and was a influential political figure. For any California locals, this tidbit of information may sound more familiar. You've already kind of mentioned it, Leah. One of our biggest landmarks here in California is the Hearst Castle, which is located in the county of San Luis Obispo, which was constructed by William Randolph Hearst Sr. And from the pictures that I've seen, it's stunning. But you said you've been.
Yeah. So I went as a teen, I think, late teens. And it's, I went on like the short tour. It was like the tour that you pay the least for. Mm-hmm. And it was like 3 hours.
So for the short tour.
For the short tour. You drive up through like a canyon to get to this castle. And it's literally a castle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
it's in California.
Yep.
And you drive up. Apparently at one point in time, they owned zebras that just like roamed the fields.
Okay.
I don't think they do anymore. But yeah, apparently there were just zebras roaming the plateau, like whatever.
Love that.
And then we went through, again, the abbreviated tour, and it took forever. There's like an indoor and an outdoor pool, and there's like gold, literal gold nuggets in the floor of the indoor pool.
Oh my God.
The outdoor pool was used very often for movies in the 60s that were like based in Rome because it looks like a Grecian pool and stuff.
I did not know that. I've seen the pictures, but I didn't know all that history behind
it. If I can go, if I can dig deep, maybe I might log into my MySpace for the first time in 10 years. If I can find the pictures, I maybe we'll post them.
Yeah.
Like, no
great.
Promises. Sorry.
No promises, because that's digging deep.
Yeah, but if I can find them, it was cool.
Very cool. So his net worth in today's money was over $2 billion. He was so well known that Orson Welles' Citizen Kane is actually based on William Randolph Hearst.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we've done some history on the Hearst family, let's hop back over to Patty.
But real quick, could you imagine having a relative that's that rich?
Yeah.
Oh, you can.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to say like, yeah, that's crazy.
You were like, yeah, I can.
No, I didn't mean, yes, I can relate. I meant, yeah, isn't that wild?
Yeah.
That's what I meant by yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Patricia Campbell Hearst was born on February 20th, 1954 in San Francisco, California. We don't know too much about her early life other than that she attended private schools growing up and took classes at the University of California, Berkeley, where she was studying art history. She was living with her fiancé, Stephen Weed, in an apartment in Berkeley in 1974. Side note that may seem irrelevant now, but I do believe it will shed some light later on. Weed was actually one of Hearst's high school teachers, and they got together when she was only a teenager. They were then engaged when she was 19 years old. So I'm going to explain later why I find these details to be relevant to the story.
Easily corruptible and influenced.
What? Did you read my notes?
No, I literally didn't.
No, but exactly. On February 4th of that year at approximately 9 p.m., the couple were at their apartment on Benvenue Street when all of a sudden two men and a woman armed with guns burst in. They beat up her fiance and then kidnapped 19-year-old Hearst. Eyewitnesses reported seeing a blindfolded Hearst pushed into the trunk of a car before the kidnappers began firing randomly into the sky and then taking off.
That's like really chaotic.
It's very chaotic. And let's put ourselves in those shoes of those people. It's scary.
Oh, for sure.
If you're
sure.
in the apartment, like, oh my God, you see yes. people shooting off guns and then throwing someone into a trunk and taking off. That's terrifying.
That's terrifying.
Hearst's kidnapping made news throughout the country, not surprisingly so, considering her family's wealth and the fact that the family owned all the major newspapers.
Yeah.
A mass search was conducted by law enforcement, including the FBI, but they could not find her. It was a few days after the kidnapping occurred that the KPFA radio station in Berkeley received an audio tape of Patty's voice. So I have bits and pieces of it here for you to read, Leah. It's super long. So I've condensed it quite a bit. You'll see it's still a lot, but this is my condensed version.
Mom, Dad, I'm okay. I had a few scrapes and stuff, but they washed them up and they're getting okay. And I caught a cold, but they're giving me pills for it and stuff. I'm not being starved or beaten or unnecessarily frightened. I'm kept blindfolded usually so that I can't identify anyone. My hands are often tied, but generally they're not. I'm not gagged or anything. I'm comfortable. And I think you can tell that I'm not really terrified or anything, and I'm okay. I would appreciate if everyone would just calm down and not try to find me and not try to make identifications, because they're not only endangering me, but they're endangering themselves. I'm with a combat unit that's armed with automatic weapons, and there's also a medical team here, and there's no way that I will be released until they let me go. So it wouldn't do any good for somebody to come in here and try to get me out by force. These people aren't just a bunch of nuts. They've been really honest with me. But they're perfectly willing to die for what they're doing, and I want to get out of here, but the only way I'm going to is if we do it their way. I just hope that you'll do what they say, Daddy, and do it quickly. I think it's important that you take their requests very seriously about not arresting any other SLA members and about following their good faith requests to the letter. And I just want to get out of here and see everyone again to be back with Steve. The SLA is very interested in seeing how you're taking this, Dad, to make sure that you're really serious and listening to what they're saying. It's really up to you to make sure that the people don't jeopardize my life by charging in and doing stupid things.
Yeah. Any initial thoughts?
My initial thought is like, that's a woman who's already been involved in this.
Really? She's certainly not. And if you hear the tone of her voice there, we can hear these recordings now.
Yeah.
She comes across as very calm, collected. She, you know, part of the recording that I did not input here is her saying, you know, if you hear any pauses or, you know, like long hesitations in what I'm saying, I'm actually the one that's stopping and starting the recordings because I just want to ensure what I'm saying is correct. And so I'm not being forced to say anything. It's all on my own accord.
I would be freaking the f*** out.
Sure.
And I wouldn't be calm enough to say like, hey, if I'm pausing, it's because I'm pausing the record. Like, no, that's not.
It's weird.
Everything about this is weird. I don't know if she's, again, a part of it from the beginning. I'm sure we'll get into all this. But like, there's something off.
Yeah, no, I agree that this whole thing is weird just because. So, I am not one of those people that, unfortunately, in emergency situations responds with calm.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you were one of those people.
One time, I should say. Okay. One time I was told that, oh, you're responding very calmly to this. And I was like, noted. Thank you.
And I can reflect on two times in my life where one time very much did not respond calm.
Mm-hmm.
And the other time I had time to process. So I was able to be like the spokesperson and come across in a calm way, but I had time to respond. The other time I'm thinking of where it was more of an emergency situation did not respond calm. In this particular situation where you know that this audio recording is going out to your mom and dad, I would literally be crying the entire time.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So the package that the radio station received with the audio tape also included a photograph of Hearst. So we're going to check it out here. I'm going to have you describe it.
Oh, see, this makes me feel like she's already been indoctrinated. Like something's already happening here. Mm-hmm. She's standing in front of what I imagine is their symbol, mm-hmm. right? Like their mm-hmm. flag or whatever.
It is.
And she's wearing a jumpsuit. And she's holding an automatic weapon of some sort
mm-hmm.
and pointing it and very calmly standing in a wide stance, posing as if she's shooting this weapon.
And then, of course, this picture could be absolutely posed. She could be like, hey, you have to do this.
Yeah.
I see that you're hesitating to say
her
that.
Her face looks very calm. Like, I feel like you could see tears running down her face if she was actually, like, being forced to do this.
Yeah. That's the complication that there is with this case.
But can we just take a moment to talk about the fact that Nico came in here to help with a technical issue?
Thank you.
Yeah, and had a comment on the picture as well. His comment was, mm-hmm. why are you looking at a picture of Tina Fey?
To which neither of us disagreed. In fact, we said, wow, how insightful.
Yeah, moving
Agreed.
On.
Yes.
Moving on.
So the purpose of the Symbionese Liberation Army, or SLA, as written in founder Donald DeFries's manifesto, was to bring anti-racist, anti-capitalist, feminist, and otherwise left-wing agenda groups together to fight against those systems. The group was started while DeFries was serving time in prison for an armed robbery. When he escaped from prison in March of 1973, he sought refuge with other SLA members in Berkeley, California, and that's where the movement really took off. Now, uniting to fight against racism and sexism and capitalism obviously is not a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
But perhaps the method by which you fight is.
Yes.
The SLA would become known by authorities as a terrorist group due to their violent nature. So one such event, you know, that speaks to the violence of this group occurred on November 6th, 1973 in Oakland, California, just a few months before the kidnapping of Patty Hearst, in which two SLA members killed a school superintendent named Marcus Foster. While Foster was the first black school superintendent in Oakland history, the SLA opposed his alleged support of a proposition to require students to carry identification cards on their person as a means of keeping non-student drug dealers off the school grounds.
What?
Yeah. As Foster was leaving a school meeting, he was shot 8 times by SLA members with hollow point bullets. A direct tie back to our last episode about Selena.
Yeah.
We talked all about hollow point bullets.
Yeah.
And each one of these bullets in this case had been packed with cyanide.
Oh.
This assassination did not go over well publicly. As a result, DeFreeze chose to switch tactics. Instead of killing someone, they would instead kidnap someone that would garner the public's interest.
Oh, so taking a life, not a good move publicly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Publicity wise, you know. So mm-hmm. Let's not do that tactic next time. Got
let's try something else awful instead.
Mm.
And thus entered Patty Hearst. When the audio recording of Patty Hearst speaking to her parents was released, DeFreeze also released his own statement. In this statement, he identified himself as Sinkyu and stated that the only way he would return Hearst to her family was if the Hearst family did something for him. He demanded that they give $70 worth of food to every needy person throughout California. Which, let's just talk about that.
Like, yeah.
Money aside, let's talk about the logistics. Logistically speaking, how does one locate every single needy person in the state of California and give them $70 worth of food?
Also, who's to say what the bar of needy is?
Sure. Sure.
So, like, I mean, that could literally every person in California could say I'm needy because I'm struggling because I live in California. Also, mm-hmm. like, what's the bar? What do you consider needy?
Yeah.
Also, how do I mail people $70?
I think what you're saying is, I mean, exactly speaks to like the logistically speaking, this was an impossible task.
Yes. And I take back what I said because you said like, oh, they were at the very beginning. You said like, oh, they abducted her and then demanded this thing mm-hmm. to happen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, at least they're trying something nice. This is dumb. This is clearly there's no realistic way for this to happen. Let's yep. set some realistic things.
Yep. Exactly.
Like, that's just dumb.
Exactly. I mean, it's an impossible task and they knew that.
Yeah.
And then, so we've already kind of talked about it logistically. Let's now consider the money side of things. How does one even quantify how much money would be needed?
Okay. How many Californians are there?
Yeah.
Multiply that times 70.
How many of those Californians identify as
needy?
How do you set that bar? It's an impossible task. It's impossible to quantify. I do need to mention that, you know, since this incident happened, researchers have determined that they believe it would cost approximately like $400 million to do so.
And what was their net worth at the time?
We're going to get into that.
Okay.
So that was a great question, because with all of that in mind, it doesn't help that although Patty's grandpa may have been soups wealthy, that actually doesn't mean that her dad was.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yes.
Yeah. And so, I mean, yes, her dad was still rich. Of course, he worked within the incredibly lucrative family business. All of the grandparents' kids did.
Mm-hmm.
But when William Randolph Hearst Sr. passed away, his children did not inherit his wealth. Rather, it was placed in a trust that was managed by a board. So while Patty Hearst's dad was indeed very, very rich, he was not feed every needy person throughout the great state of California rich. So in response to this demand, her dad had to take out a loan for $2 million for food, and he ended up giving it to a group that serviced the needy in the Bay Area.
So not all of California.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So clearly this did not go over well with the SLA. They were like, WTF.
And he had to take out a loan to do it.
And Hearst, she also was kind of like, WTF. Having grown up in a world where she didn't need to know the ins and outs of her family's wealth, she didn't understand just how wealthy they were or were not. Additionally, I think anyone, even if you come from a family of low or moderate wealth, you still are like, really, mom and dad, you can't some way, somehow find the money to get me out of here?
Hello, my name's Elliot and I run the Anthology of Heroes podcast. Each episode of the show follows the life of a hero from one country of the world, but rather than the stuffy old politicians or tired stories you read about in school, I'll be sharing the forgotten stories of rebels, slaves, heretics, and outcasts, men and women who went against the tide of history regardless of the consequences. If this sounds like your kind of thing, check us out on Instagram and, of course, all major podcasting platforms. The name again is Anthology of Heroes Podcast, and we hope to see you there.
We are so excited to share with you all about Wild.
Wild is an art gallery that features artwork created by Native American artists. The gallery features all kinds of artwork, including posters, paintings, and prints.
And they have a really great filtering software on their website where you can filter exactly what kind of art you are interested in by artist, size, and tribe.
You can also filter by price point, and you'll find that they have beautiful artwork that fits all budgets. And this is a great time to check them out as we come up on the holidays. Art can be such a unique and special gift.
Wild is located in Austin, Texas, and they ship art from their online store nationwide. So if you order a piece of art from their website, they can ship it to you anywhere in the States.
So go check them out now at www.wild.gallery. That is Wild spelled W-Y-L-D, W-Y-L-D.gallery.
There were actually additional audio recordings released from Hearst in which she addressed her parents saying, quote, "I've been hearing reports about the food program. So far, it sounds like you and your advisors have managed to turn it into a real disaster. You said that it was out of your hands. What you should have said was that you washed your hands of it. It sounds like most of the food is low quality. No one received any beef or lamb. Anyway, it certainly didn't sound like the kind of food our family is used to eating," unquote.
She's involved. There's like, I know I'm always such the skeptic.
I feel like you and I go back and forth on being skeptics.
She's been involved since the beginning. And I said that.
Yeah, you did say that.
She's like, how dare you not feed them beef and lamb like we have at our royal dinners.
And then I'll be the, devil's advocate to say that she could just be like a super sheltered, super privileged kid that was like, you're not feeding them beef and lamb? That's what I had all growing up. I don't understand why you can't afford to do that for other people.
Yeah, I don't.
Because
I don't.
I've lived the type of life that I never once had to consider my family's finances.
Yeah. Chicken for everyone.
The fake chicken.
Fake chicken. Tofu for everyone.
Tofu for everyone. I think there are a lot of factors here.
Yes.
Desperation being one, of course.
Yes.
But there was also a lot of brainwashing going on.
Yeah.
When the Food for the Needy plan turned into a disaster, the SLA was in Hearst's ear telling her that her father was lying about not having the funds, that her father was just one small part of the bigger problem of capitalism, and that he cared more about money than about her. And I think Hearst may have been particularly susceptible to being brainwashed. She's only 19 years old
yeah.
at this point.
Yes, I have to stop 19. Being so judgy. Yeah.
And this is where I'm going to bring it back to the relevance of the details of the fiance that we mentioned earlier. They got together when she was super, super young. She was only a teenager when she got together with one of her high school teachers.
Yeah.
She grew up going to private schools and in a privileged enough environment that afforded her the ignorance of not knowing the actual details of her parents' wealth. So generally speaking, I think she lived a rather sheltered life.
Yes, you're correct. She probably lived a very sheltered life.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of where she's coming from probably comes from like this not understanding
yeah.
of like the real world, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I also think she was somehow involved.
I don't disagree with you either way. This is why this is a story that we're still talking about.
Yeah.
By April 3rd, 2 months after the kidnapping, Hearst released another audio tape in which she pledged her allegiance to the SLA. She said that she had been given the choice to be released or to join the SLA, and she had chosen the latter. She also changed her name to Tanya. Hearst solidified her allegiance to the SLA just a week or so later when, on April 15th, Hearst and other members of the SLA were caught on surveillance footage at the Hibernia Bank in San Francisco. They were filmed as they were wielding semi-automatic rifles and demanded that the bank tellers turn over money. For Hearst specifically, she was heard on camera yelling, "I'm Tanya, up, up, up against the wall, motherfuckers." We actually have a picture from this incident to check out. There's several pictures. I only pulled one.
I'm so excited. Okay. Yeah. But I mean, I'm no doubt, like, it's probably her. I could see how they would say, yes, that's very much her. And she said her name is Sonia. And she's very clearly there holding a gun.
Yeah. And some of the other pictures from the incident that I didn't pull up, but you can certainly look up if you just look up Patty Hearst during the bank robbery, you can see her actually, like, her mouth open, screaming and yelling commands at the people in the bank. This incident would result in the theft of over $10,000 and two people would be shot. This footage would be projected nationwide. And this is when the general public kind of went nuts. And there is, you know, I don't really mention it much in my research here, but there have been some people that have said that it was intentional on the part of the SLA to make sure that she was photographed or, you know, videotaped during this incident to show that they had converted a high profile person to their cause.
I was just going to say, none of this hurts them.
No.
A, it's publicity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah, it's like it's you very clearly converted a high profile person to be on appearing to be on your side.
More than appearing to be on your side, she's wielding
a weapon.
A weapon, and in an incident that ended up
costing people $10,000.
$10,000 and physically harming two people.
Yeah.
So you had several people, you know, at this time that believed that Hearst was brainwashed either into, you know, believing the values of this group or that she was simply doing what she had to do to survive. At the same time, you had other people that were completely convinced that Hearst was a traitor and a menace to society. In the words of Attorney General William B. Saxby, he said she was, quote, not a reluctant participant and should be treated as a, quote again, common criminal, unquote. To further solidify claims that she was indeed a reluctant participant and had not been brainwashed, Hearst said as much herself in an audio recording that was released shortly after the armed robbery. In this recording, she again identified herself as Tanya and then said, quote, our actions of April 15th forced the corporate state to help finance the revolution. As for being brainwashed, the idea is ridiculous beyond belief. I am a soldier in the people's army.
That's so funny to me. One sentence like negates the other.
Yeah.
For being brainwashed, that's ridiculous, but I am a Star Lord.
Yeah.
Worship me.
I think what she's saying is like, I'm a soldier for this
cause. Yes. Mm-hmm.
About a month after the bank robbery, Hearst was seen again, this time at a Mel's Sporting Goods store in Inglewood, California. While two other members of the SLA stole from the store, Hearst was spotted waiting for them out at their van. When the manager followed the thieves out to the van, Hearst pulled out her automatic rifle and shot at the storefront before taking off. Some reports say that she shot at the store upwards of 27 times. This would make for the beginning of the end of the SLA. Following this incident at the store, the Los Angeles Police Department put out an all-points bulletin, or APB, for the van. The very next day, the van was spotted outside of what was a safe house for the SLA on 54th Street. Hundreds of officers swarmed to the scene. What ensued was absolutely chaotic. It's reported that between 6,000 to 9,000 rounds of ammunition were discharged between the Los Angeles Police Department and the SLA. This whole thing was televised live for the nation to see. By the end of this event, the house had been set on fire and all six SLA members inside had been killed, including DeFreeze. Hearst, however, was not among them. Hearst was at another location with the two remaining members of the SLA watching the whole thing play out on television. And I feel like this isn't in my notes, but I have to mention it just because you and I are both diehard Disneyland fanatics.
Yeah.
She was staying at a hotel that was very close to Disneyland.
In Anaheim.
Yeah. Just by the way.
Yeah.
Hearst, or Tanya, as she called herself, released another audio recording following the shootout. She memorialized every person that had been killed and ended the recording with, quote, I died in that fire on 54th Street, but out of the ashes, I was reborn. I know what I have to do. Hearst and the remaining two SLA members continued to train daily for combat, between running with weights on their legs to shooting practice with assault rifles. The three fugitives traveled the country for a short period of time before returning to California to engage in another series of crimes. One of these crimes was another bank robbery where someone was fatally shot. Authorities eventually received a tip that led them to an apartment where Hearst was staying. They promptly arrested her on September 18th, 1975, 19 months after her original capture. When she was booked at the jail, she wrote Urban Gorilla as her occupation and asked her attorney to send love on her behalf to, quote, all the sisters and brothers out there. She also refused to speak to what she called her, quote, fascist pig family. By the time Hearst's trial began on January 15th, 1976, her team had put together a defense that she had been brainwashed and that she had not been a willing participant in the activities of the SLA. Her defense team was headed up by F. Lee Bailey, a well-known defense attorney who would become even more well-known later in his career when he defended O.J. Simpson in his murder trial.
Mm-hmm.
There was indeed some evidence to support the theory that Hearst had been brainwashed. For one, Hearst had reported an IQ of 130 prior to the 1974 kidnapping. When she tested again following her arrest, her IQ had dropped to 112. She was described by a psychologist as being a low-effect zombie that had severe loss of memory. Physically, she looked like a shadow of the person she had once been. When arrested, Hearst weighed only 87 pounds and was smoking heavily, something that she had never done before. Psychologist and brainwashing expert Lewis J. West was brought in to examine her, and he was so convinced that she had indeed been brainwashed that he actually wrote to then-President Jimmy Carter to have her released from prison. By the time Hearst took the witness stand in her own defense, her tune had completely changed. Of the people she had once spoken of with such admiration, she now called them her captors and her rapist.
Yeah.
It was clear, however, that she never once had a chance with this judge. Judge Oliver Jesse Carter, who had a personal relationship with a member of the prosecution, did not allow expert testimony, such as the testimony of the psychologist that might have actually assisted her in her acquittal. He sided with the prosecution when they said that Hearst had been a willing participant in the crimes, that she had not been raped but had consensual sex with members of the group, and that she was, as a doctor the prosecution had stated, quote, a rebel in search of a cause. Hearst's behavior in the courtroom didn't do much to change her odds either. Due to the medication that she was on at the time, she appeared lethargic throughout the trial. Her defense attorney, Bailey, was also chastised for putting her on the stand as he did not allow her to answer many questions. On March 20th, 1975, Hearst was convicted of bank robbery and use of a firearm in the course of a felony. She was sentenced to 7 years in prison. The judge said of her that, quote, rebellious young people who, for whatever reason, become revolutionaries and voluntarily commit criminal acts will be punished, unquote. There was no mention of the fact that Hearst had been kidnapped in the first place.
Yeah.
Hearst's prison sentence would be commuted by President Jimmy Carter in 1979. Later, President Bill Clinton, on his last day in office in 2001.
What?
That it was in 2001.
Yeah. That's like a weird time flux. Like, what's happening? That was 2001.
That feels weird in your brain, right?
Yeah.
It was in 2001.
What the f***?
It feels weird that was only 20 years ago. Anyway, he would issue a full pardon for her. The remaining members of the SLA would be tried for the crimes in later years and would serve time in prison for them. Just 2 months after Hearst's release, she would marry Bernard Lee Shaw, who had worked as her personal bodyguard when she was previously out of prison on bail. She now has grandchildren and for a period of time was living in Wilton, California, which is like 10 minutes from me. So that's kind of crazy. She's now in South Carolina. She bought like a really big house out there, but she lived in Wilton for a number of years. And I did not know that. In 1981, she wrote a memoir titled Every Secret Thing, in which she continued to state that she had been abducted, raped, and brainwashed during her time with the SLA. In 1988, a movie titled Patty Hearst would be released based on this book, starring Natasha Richardson. She has since appeared in some movies and television shows and even participates very successfully in the Westminster Dog Show.
Mm.
What else is there to say? Do you have any thoughts?
My thoughts are, I know I'm quick to judge, and I know I was like, she's guilty. She's in this from the start. And there's a part of me that still believes that, mm-hmm. but there's also a part of me that, like, if it is true that she was abducted and raped and brainwashed, then there's, like, obviously I have so much empathy for her.
Yeah.
Will we ever know?
Yeah, I just feel like it's one of those tough things because I think we can totally agree with, like, Stockholm syndrome is obviously a real thing.
Yes, yeah.
Brainwashing is obviously a real thing, but it just feels weird that she was converted so quickly. It was 2 months into her capture.
Yeah, that's where my
skepticism
comes in. Yeah.
But do we also look at it as, like, you know, you and I are fortunate in that we have had lives where, I mean, do I say fortunate that, like, we've had lives where we've had more opportunities to be skeptical and lives where we've been more educated maybe or more aware of things than someone that grew up going to private schools, started dating a guy when she was a teenager and then got engaged to him when she was 19. Perhaps she just lived
her teacher.
She just lived a really privileged, sheltered life. And so perhaps someone in that predicament is more easily influenced.
I mean, she very clearly is. Like, she has a pattern of, it wasn't just her getting captured by the SLA. She also had other patterns showing that she was very clearly influenced or affected by people in more, like, authoritative positions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's why we're still talking about it now.
Yeah.
Just that it's a, like, oh my gosh, I remember that whole thing happening. I remember how I felt about her, that she was like a traitor. But then we need to learn more, like, oh no, maybe she was brainwashed. It's a forever mystery. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Hashtag History.
We will share the pictures that we discussed on the episode to our Instagram, and all sources used to put together the episode can be found on our website at hashtaghistory-pod.com.
Subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you use, share about us with your family and friends, and then give us a rate and review. We would love that so much.
Speaking of Instagram, be sure to check us out on there. We're at #history_podcast, and we're also on TikTok at #history.
And come join us on Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can help support our books and food supply. You also get access to some behind-the-scenes content, weekly #hangout episodes, and we mail you cards and stickers.
All the good stuff.
Only the good stuff. Thank you all so much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Also, sorry, side note, love your nail polish.
Thank you.
Noticed it. Love it.
Sibianese. Sim, and a women, and a women.
And a women?
Are between.
Vermouth.
We've said that before.
Yeah. It's like, we hate it, but it does the job.
Your neighbor is very popular. There's been a significant amount of cars coming through here.
Is it?
What time does the party start?
I think she said it starts at 5.
I've just seen many people.
Oh.
Like, behind your head.
The band.
Behind your head, there's a lot of traffic.
That's the band, probably. Okay. It's like half a page of blue script, which is...
It extends to the next page.
That is a full page. That equates to a full page, guys.
This is 1/3 of what the audio recording said.
All right, so I apologize because apparently vermouth hits us really a lot.
We know that.
You know that now.
We know that.
Everybody knows that. Okay.
I love these people that are bringing, like, tin foil. Can we go?
Do you want to come?
The party? I can't. I can't.
You want to come?
I literally would.
You can wear my green pants, my green paper back pants.
Well, now you've sold me. The Radeon.
Face.
Oh, no, it's me. Okay. It's because Alex is leaving.
God damn it, Alex.
No, so I get, like, 18 notifications.
Because you, like, open the garage.
Garage inside door the garage. Has opened. Garage outside door has closed. Garage outside door has opened. Person has been spotted leaving it.
Yeah. Girl, we're married to the same person, yeah. So it's fine.
So I get 8 notifications for one movement.
Movement in your front yard. It's a f***ing tree blowing in the wind, bitch.
It's literally a leaf.
It also destroys our planet, but whatever.
But I also really like it. Oh my god. Okay.